the ACA, food trucks, and a photographer's perspective of Goulds. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The deadline to sign up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act exchanges is coming up in early December. We'll talk with a navigator who's going to answer your questions about anything to do with signing up. Also, Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog is one of the folks who brought the food truck craze to Miami. What's he up to now? Well, he'll join us to talk about it. And then finally, we'll meet Simone Titania Major, a Night Arts Challenge winner. She won for her photo project that opens the lens on a part of a sometimes overlooked community here in Miami-Dade. All of that and your calls on Sundial here on WLRN. First, the news. Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Well, there's something surprising about the ACA, or Obamacare, open enrollment season this year, that is. It's underway right now. Despite confusion over attempts by Congress to end the program, a shorter enrollment period, and almost no federal funds for advertising, enrollment so far is almost 50% higher now than at this point last year. We're going to find out more from
Islara
Soto. Thank you. You know what? I just had a moment, Islara. I'm so sorry. She's an ACA navigator with the Epilepsy Foundation. And you know what? We're taking your calls during this program because anything you need to know about ACA enrollment, the deadline's coming up. This is the time. We'll get your answers if we can. 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Again, basic questions about enrollment. Any questions you may have about the ACA, if you haven't signed up, again, that deadline is coming up. It was shortened from last time. We used to have 3 months to sign up. This time, a lot less time. The deadline's coming up in early December. 800-743-9576. Any questions you have if you have yet to sign up for insurance under the ACA exchanges. All right. Islara, the enrollment period, or I should say the enrollment is up nationally, as I mentioned. How about in Florida? What's it looking like?
Well, in Florida, we just received our snapshot yesterday for the first 2 weeks of enrollment. And cumulatively from the 1st of November when open enrollment started, we are at 1,478,000 enrollments and some change.
And what's that? I mean, compared to the year before, what is that?
That is nationally. So those are the national numbers. And in Florida, we have had for the first 2 weeks of open enrollment, we've had 210 within our agency, but I don't have the actual Florida number. So I only have the national numbers.
Even anecdotally, what have you seen this year compared to last year?
Mass enrollments. We've been trying to prepare consumers ahead of time, you know, for open enrollment, making appointments, letting them know about the short window. But come November 1st, it was like the gates just open and everybody's just calling and calling and calling. And we're really busy and the enrollments are up. And it's surprising because it's kind of had the opposite effect of what we thought we were going to see, all this fuzz and all this talk about the repeal and replace. We thought that consumers were going to be afraid and they weren't going to enroll. They were just going to disregard it. And it's kind of had the opposite effect.
Hmm. Now, as I mentioned, the period to enroll is shorter. But real quickly, help us understand with the enrollment period. Is that the only time you can sign up for insurance for
the
ACA?
No, it's not. No, it's not. And actually, in the state of Florida, and this is very important because you're not seeing it anywhere else, the national deadline for enrollment is December 15th, but in the state of Florida, it has been extended until the 31st of December. That's because Florida was declared a disaster because of Hurricane Irma. So right. We're actually in a special enrollment period that's been extended to the 31st of December. So consumers can actually enroll past the December 15th deadline. The only thing about that is that they're not going to be able to go online to healthcare.gov and enroll. They will have to do it by phone, by calling the healthcare marketplace or coming to see us. We can obviously do that in person with them by calling the marketplace and explaining things to them personally, which is still part of what's very, very important about a navigation appointment.
Now, obviously, also, I've read that a lot of funding has been cut for navigators like yourselves. Does that mean there's fewer of you to help people out, fewer places people can go? I mean, how has that really, hurt your efforts?
Well, yes, all navigation programs have been cut. We've suffered a loss as well. We're operating a third of what we were before in terms of navigator staff. We're still throughout the entire state of Florida, and the consumers are still the same, if not increasing. And so it's been difficult. The media budget has also been cut, so we're doing a lot of grassroots outreach, a lot of social media, a lot of non-branded campaign ads that for the marketplace that have been developed by groups such as Enroll America and Invisibles. So we're using a lot of their media and just trying to spread the word. But it's been difficult. It's been difficult. We, you know, our site locations have decreased because we're operating with very minimal staff. But, you know, we're all doing, you know, the work of two or three navigators. But that's okay. I mean, the enrollment numbers are up and it hasn't hurt the enrollments.
Again, the number is 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. In here with Islada Soto. She's an ACA navigator with the Epilepsy Foundation. We're going to take your calls here and answer any questions we can. If you have yet to sign up, as you had heard, the deadline in Florida had been extended. It's through the end of December. Before you know it, it'll be here. So now is the time to do it. I did want to, before we start taking any phone calls here, though, Islada, is what are some of the questions that you typically get? What are some of the things that people are either confused about or what they need to know when they come in?
Well, typically consumers ask, is it still around? I thought it was gone. I thought, you know, is it Trump care now? They think, you know, they just don't realize that the Affordable Care Act is still a law. It's still in place. You still have to have coverage or exemption or pay the fine, the individual mandate. So there's a lot of confusion. People still ask, do I need to enroll? Will I get penalized? And yes, you do need to enroll or you could get penalized.
All right, let's go to the phones. I'm going to start with Lois in Plantation. Lois, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead, Lois.
My question is, what's the income that you can have and be eligible for the ACA?
Okay, income qualifications.
Well, anybody is eligible for an Affordable Care Act plan. To be eligible for the subsidies, the financial assistance that helps offset the cost of either the premiums or the insurance costs with when you're using the insurance to reduce cost share, that you have to be above 100% of the Florida federal poverty level, the FPL between 100% and 400%. And for the reduced cost plans, those silver tiered category plans that have the lower deductibles and the lower copays, that's between 100% FPL and 250% FPL. So it depends on your household income and size where you fall in that table.
Lois?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, does that answer your question or is there anything else that you wanted to ask?
Well, it doesn't really, but that's all right. Okay. Thank you.
All right, Lois, thank you. Good luck to you. All right. You know, that was something else that that folks were worried about, concerned about, too, is that rates would be going up, possibly. Is that the case? Rates will go up for some people, but it depends on if you're qualifying under any of those figures that you just gave, right?
Correct. I mean, the premiums go up every year. But so do the subsidies. So you don't really feel it. I mean, you know, when the subsidies go up, you see very minimal. And I, the consumers I've navigated haven't felt any burden as the media was projecting that they would feel.
Again, the number 800-743-9576. Let's go to Stephen in Weston. Stephen, how are you doing?
Well, is that me?
Yeah, that's you, sir. Welcome to the program.
What's your question? Yeah, thank you. I'm listening to your radio a lot while I'm driving. My wife is not an American citizen, and she does have the right to work. She's got a Social Security number. Is she eligible for signing on for a health care through healthcare.gov?
Absolutely. She has legal status here in the United States. Yes, she is.
Okay, no. Okay, perfect. But, I mean, we're waiting for the green card appointment like any day now, but she has right to work and, you know, right to reside. So we can actually apply on the healthcare.gov website, correct?
Correct.
Oh, great. Thank you.
All right. Well, there you go, Stephen. Thank you so much. I appreciate the call and best of luck to you as well as you move forward. You know what? Before we go back to the phones, real quickly, I wanted to also ask, compared to last year, have you seen perhaps, you know, a little more confidence or comfort that, you know, it's been around a little while now, that people have gotten accustomed to the system, you know, and the website, the federal website, or, you know, you still see the same kind of questions and confusion?
Well, we still see the same questions and confusions, if not more. It's shifted. It's shifted from the website issues to the fuzz that the media and the political environment creates. But, you know, it never changes. We still get questions and a lot of confusion.
All right. Let me go to, again, the number is 800-743-9576. Let me go to Miguel in Fort Lauderdale. Miguel, thank you for your patience. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Anyways, I just find it very hard to believe that enrollment is up or higher than last year, or even the same as last year. And also, whatever she's telling us, it doesn't sound like what they're telling us over the phone. When I went to re-enroll, I was paying $230 for a single man in Florida, Fort Lauderdale. And now when I called last week, they're telling me my same package is going to be over $750.
So you called two different times. Is that, did I get that right? No, so you talked to somebody in two different times?
No, what I'm saying, I spoke to someone last week over the phone, and now I'm hearing her talking, and it doesn't sound like she's either telling us either the truth, or she's just misinformed, or the people that we're talking to on the phone are misinformed.
I'm not sure who you're talking to. Are you talking to a broker? Are you talking to healthcare.gov? Are you talking to a navigator?
Healthcare, the marketplace.
The marketplace, okay. Well, you know, we would have to look at your individual case and see exactly, maybe is it that they're just comparing that one plan, or are they giving you all of your options? Are they just telling you that your specific plan?
All of the options.
Okay.
They told me, okay, we found something, maybe you can do $500 a month. Even $500 a month at $30,000, I cannot afford it.
Right.
So what they're trying to, what do I go cheat on my taxes? Do I take less work? I work 7 days a week. I make $30,000 a year. So my other options are, okay, so if people are not, I guess if you make $24,000 or less, you get free insurance. Is that correct? That's what they told me. So what they're trying to push me into is becoming a less worker and making less money a year.
Let's see, Miguel, let's see if we can figure this out a second. Hold on a moment. So, you know,
sir.
When a person comes in, they're going to get all the options. I'm taking it.
Correct. If they go see a navigator, they will. If they call them healthcare marketplace,
now,
they will.
Now, what are you hearing here, though? Because it sounds like Miguel is being told these are the only options you qualify for, or, I mean, is this a person, you know, I think he just told us what he's making. Is this someone who would, be accepted for the subsidies?
Absolutely. A single, making, I'm sorry, how much did you say you were making a year?
I'm making $30,000. I'm single, and I have to pay child support on one child.
Okay, so you're at 250% of what the federal poverty level is, which is the cap at 250 is $30,150. So you do qualify for those cost sharing reductions and the advanced premium tax credits. So I haven't seen your particular, you know, application and not knowing your eligibility results, but you can always appeal your results if you don't think that they're accurate.
So for him right now, what should he do?
He should go see a navigator in person instead of getting, you know, through the phone. It can always be confusing. You're not seeing the black and white of the paper. So go see a navigator, have them go through your application, make sure that everything is correct and accurate on your application. They'll be able to let you know if you need to file an appeal against the results of your eligibility letter and show you all the plans and all your options.
All right. So Miguel,
we don't even know what navigators are. We don't even know where to go. I mean, this thing should be very simple and clear. When we speak on the phone, we should be able to get coverage, period.
All right, Miguel, let's do this. I'm going to put you on hold. I want to get your information, your contact, and let's see if we can't help you find that navigator, okay? So just hold on for 1 second for me, all right? All right, I'm going to take one more call here as we finish up, because I know there are a lot of people who have a lot of questions. And look, there's some confusion there, and it may just be, you know, that
Sometimes you get unlucky. I don't know. I mean, I've heard this before. So we're going to see if we can't clear that up. Let me go to one more person here. We got Les in Lauderhill. Les, thank you for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Yes, you clarified a little bit based upon the figures that you gave to the last caller. But before, several minutes ago, when you said that it was a percentage of the poverty level, you didn't give figures. And people would like to know what those figures are
okay.
So that they know whether they're going to be eligible.
Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Go ahead.
I can give you those figures. It depends on your household size. So let's just do a household size of one. 100% of the FPL is $12,060.
That's the federal poverty level.
Yes.
I see.
138% FPL is $16,643. 200% is $24,120. 250% is $30,150. And now you move into the 300 and 400, which you still qualify for advanced premium tax credits, but you no longer qualify for the reduced cost sharing plan option. So 300% is $36,180, and the 400% is $48,240. And it goes on, you know, depending on your household.
And that's a total household income.
That is total household income, yes.
And she was,
okay.
Yes.
So thank you very much.
All right, Les, I hope that helped. Thank you so much for your patience. I appreciate it. Let's finish up on this just real quickly. Again, you have fewer places people can go, but, you know, what do you usually you just told Miguel, it's best to go in and talk in person. How often do you run into that situation, though? Maybe sometimes some people can't get out. Can they still get this all done through the website
yes.
or a phone call?
Yes, they can navigate themselves via the website, or even we navigate by phone as well.
All right. And you know, the other thing, too, real quickly, is to remind people the deadline has been extended for Florida. Remind people again what that is.
Yes. So the deadline for Florida is December 31st.
Does that mean, by the way, that your insurance starts January 1st of 2018?
If you enroll by December 15th, you'll have coverage by January 1st. So between the 16th and the 31st, you're pushing to a February enrollment start
okay.
date.
Okay. All right. You know what? We're going to put all this information up on our website so that you can always click on the link, check it out for yourself, and we'll make sure that you have those phone numbers too as well. You know what? It is one of those tricky things, but that's why we do it. So we try to find some of those answers. So Islada Soto, thank you again so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank
right.
you.
Again, she's an ACA navigator with the Epilepsy Foundation. And again, we'll post that information up on our website later today so that you can check it out as well. Thank you so much. All right, coming up next, let's change things up and get your appetite going, because we're going to talk about food next here on Sundial, here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
You can rise. Can I touch with you?
Yeah, here we go.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your patience.
Who needs a little bit more?
Yeah, we've got four Cubano all day.
Four Cubano all day.
Hey, this one's not ready. Okay, I'm buttering that one.
I got it.
Hey, boss, can you have me bread?
Yuca.
One bread for you.
Hey, for my
yes,
finger.
Sir. You okay? You want to keep going? You want to stop?
I want to keep going.
Okay, keep going. Keep going.
Go, little man.
Come out. Help him with the banana ketchup and the yuca fries. Go with the chili vinegar.
Oh, that's a scene with Jon Favreau and John Leguizamo in the movie Chef. They're running a food truck making Cuban sandwiches and traveling the country. In that scene, they were in South Beach. Food trucks have exploded in popularity across the country in the past decade. Since 2010, they've been popping up in a lot of places here in Miami. My next guest, one of the founders of the food truck scene in the Magic City, the owner of the Gastropod, Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog. He's also got his own TV show. And just like Favreau, he's traveled the country. Chef Jeremiah, thanks so much for joining us, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me out, Luis. Super excited to put on my NPR voice for everybody.
Anybody who's seen your television show, you know what? You do have to have an NPR voice because anybody who's ever known you or been around you, you just have this explosive personality, man. You're all over the place. Is that natural or is this part of the Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog persona?
You know what it is? I drink a lot of coffee. I was chatting with a friend over Twitter, and he was saying something along the lines of these cold brew coffees have enough caffeine that he feels like wrestling a bear. Shout out to Mr. Rosendorf. And I feel like wrestling a bear every morning.
All right. Well, you know what? And you don't have to today. This is a public radio interview, so you can chill back and relax, and we'll have some fun. So many things I want to talk to you about. Let me start with this is, you know, because I was thinking about the food truck thing. And, you know, I pass by a couple of food trucks on the way to work at least every week. And I remember I was in Las Vegas before I came here, and the food truck scene was really popping. It started going. But take me back to 2009. That's really around the time you and a couple other guys started to pop up with the food truck thing. Why did you think it was going to work here in Miami?
I'm going to close my eyes and harken back to 2009. It was a different time in Miami. It was a different landscape. People didn't know how to eat at food trucks. We had to teach them one by one. You know, it's super funny. The way the whole thing came about, we weren't looking to open a food truck to roam the streets and sell food initially. It was, we were already doing the same thing, but we were doing twice the amount of work. We would do these gigs where we had to set up, you know, makeshift kitchens under tents a lot of time. We had to rent a lot of equipment. We had to bring out, you know, think about it. You need stuff to cook on, so you need your equipment. Then you need the product. You need the food. You need to keep the food cold, so you need a lot of refrigeration. I hope I'm painting the picture here. It's a lot of work. You need a lot of gear to make this happen.
Yeah, you're not just putting a truck up. You know, there's a lot going on.
Absolutely. So, you know, rewind back to those days, and I just kind of, it flashed in my mind. I was like, you know, we need one mobile contained unit to be able to pull this off wherever we want to go, and just to make our lives easier. Because it's like by the time you set up this kitchen, you're so tired from setting up, getting everything together, that, hey, if we put it all in one package, little did I know that opening a food truck was probably the most challenging thing I've ever done in my career. It is at least 10 times harder than operating a traditional brick-and-mortar restaurant. You know, everyone thinks, oh, let me open a food truck. That seems like such an easy thing to do. My friends tell me that I can cook well, so I'm going to open a food truck. Don't do that. You know, one of the 10,000 emails that I've gotten over the years, I want to open a food truck, the first words out of my mouth most likely are, don't do it. Unless you have an extreme passion for cooking, you have this weird sadistic kind of, I want to torture myself every day and not make any money and, you know, be away and on the streets hustling. It's you know, it's a different dynamic being in a food truck. You have to think two steps ahead because it's like camping.
Why do you think that there are people who, and look, I let me say that, you know, in college, in high school, in college, I spent a lot of time working in restaurants. It's just a part of way of making money as a teenager. So I got to see the business from the inside. And I also learned very quickly that that's the business you don't want to open because most of them fail. It is an insane amount of work. And it's just not, you may succeed for a little while and then it's dead. But why do you think so many people romanticized that idea and thought, yeah, what a great, you know, like the movie Chef with John Favreau? It just seems like such a cool thing to do. But yeah, no, it is. It is still running a restaurant. But why do you think people have that romanticized idea?
Yeah, there is, you know, there is a lot of romanticizing the industry. You know, people get in their head that, you know, running a restaurant is some sort of magical thing. Yes, there are very amazing moments and parts to it. Being able to feed people and get instant gratitude or feedback is one of the most, it's probably like endorphin popping, you know, sort of brain stimulation, because I get to feed you and I get to see your reaction right away. In a restaurant, in a food truck, even more, that, you know, immediate relationship is developed right away. But it's funny, you started with the movie Chef. Shout out to Favreau. Shout out to Roy Choi, who is the one behind the scenes consulting on that. And my wife and I always joke about it. Like, that is the story of our food truck life. You know, we built our food truck. One of our first gigs was traveling across the country to California, driving with a trailer behind us, two kids in the back. Like, you know, it's the movie. We did that. It makes me smile every time I see the movie. It was done so well. And yeah, that definitely highlights the positive side of it, right?
You know, we think about food trucks. Help me define the difference, though, that we've always had, like, the hot dog stand, right? You know, the little snack stand. And, of course, I don't know if you consider the ice cream man. Granted, he's in a truck. But, I mean, what's the difference between what we've had before and what this food truck thing is now? Which has been around for a decade, by the way. It's not new.
Yeah, it's, well, so L.A., New York have been, you know, huge sort of sectors of pushing that, you know, what would you call it, elevated cuisine out of a mobile vehicle, right? So it sort of changed from a roach coach or a taco truck. Everyone thinks, oh, taco truck, right? And it just, I think it was changing at the time when, again, Roy Choi, Kogi, tacos, Korean barbecue in L.A., he was the first to take the model and to use social media to promote it. So with technology changing and being able to tell your public, I'm going to be on the corner of so-and-so at this time, it was just changing the game and it was all happening super fast. So I think food trucks blew up a lot because of social media and Twitter, to be more specific, because what's up with those Facebook ads? I mean, but it was, looking back, it was a really cool time because you could sort of timestamp that, and the early tens, right, was when food trucks really blew up. Here in Miami, we went from literally 2 food trucks to 100 within the first 12 months of us operating. Within 2 years, it was 200 trucks. So my wife and I would go set up Gastropod. It was the 1962 Airstream trailer that we converted to the food truck. And we kind of did our own thing. Like, I'm a chef. I come from fine dining. I didn't get myself a trailer so I can flip burgers, you know, and make some money on it. I was doing it, you know, when it started was, hey, this could be really cool. Like, what if I do my food out of this really cool trailer? We had the sort of the dichotomy of it was a vintage trailer, you know, nice and shiny. And inside we had all this new technology cooking equipment. We had immersion circulators, smoking guns, CVAP controlled vapor oven technology. So it was just sort of like this hybrid of what we were doing. And I always thought of it as, how can I put out the food? Everything had to be under $10. We made everything from scratch except for mayonnaise, because let's be honest, Duke's mayonnaise is amazing. it just kind of like we took the ball and ran with it. So we started out and a bunch of other people rolled out. There's been some amazing food trucks in Miami. There's also, let's be honest, been a lot of less than stellar, very mediocre, you know, people selling food.
Well, that happens when you have, right, when you have like something grows in popularity and a lot of people want to jump in. So, again, we're talking with Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog. And you know what? I'll open up the phone lines here. Want to know from you, what is your favorite food truck in South Florida? And if you've had the chance to travel around the country, maybe you've caught some of the other great food trucks in other cities like New York or L.A. or Austin or Portland, Seattle. Let us know what is the best food truck experience you ever had. Maybe you own one. You tried it and you have a story to share. We'd love to hear from you. 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. So going back then to, it was around 2009, right? When things started, you were working on Gastropod. There was the Latin Burger and Taco was coming up. Yellow Submarine, I think, came up after that. They come out, you come out. What was that reaction at the beginning? How did people respond? I wondered if it was anything like the movie, because in that movie, Chef, you know, he parks his food truck out there in front of, he was in South Beach, and everybody was in line. Everybody wanted a piece of this. What was it like, though, when you guys finally opened up, though?
Can somebody in the studio cue up some crickets for the first day of service? Crickets, please. Yeah, no, it's not always that that movie-esque scene that you wish for. First day we opened, I think we did 5 or 6 people for lunch. It was a struggle, you know. We had to teach Miami that it's cool, or it's a good thing to eat at a food truck, right? Like, there's sort of like there was a stigmatism against eating in a food truck. I'm gonna get sick. Oh, it's a roach coach. It's dirty. We know that image is a lot in Miami. It's a very flashy kind of city. When we came out, we had a beautiful, shiny Airstream trailer that you can, you know, look at yourself basically in a mirror. And then the other food trucks coming out at the time, it's funny, I hope Jim Hines from Latin Burger is listening, because you know Gastropod was the first truck in Miami to do the new thing, dude. There was AC's Lemonade in the Grove at the park. He's been there forever. Which brings up a bunch of side topics that maybe we should, you know, table for now. We'll put a pin in that one. But, like, we basically got kicked off the street, I think, every single day that we operated for the first 6 months. You know, when you do something new in Miami, it sort of takes a little while for Miami to catch on. And, you know, we would get... you know, verbally berated by police officers or City of Miami. I just want you guys to know I hold no hard, you know, feelings against you. It's all water under the bridge. But those first 6 months when you were trying to arrest me because I'm selling hot dogs for $4, that's not cool.
You know what? We got to take a break, but I want to get back to this because that was something interesting about it's still sort of happening in other cities. I want to know what it's been like here in Miami. You know, when food trucks did finally explode, that there were a lot of battles between businesses, restaurants, city leaders. What do we do with these guys and restrictions that had to be put on where you could go? Again, the number is 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Love to know your thoughts of the best food trucks in South Florida and Miami. And if you've had the experience, tell us all about it. We'll have more on this coming up on Sundial here on WLRN.
Welcome to the land of beer and cheese. Welcome to the land of beer and cheese. I'm all up in your guts like a bratwurst in a bun. Madtown, USA, home of the number one party school in the nation. Yeah! U of W Madison.
Better be drinking beer, 1, 2, 3.
I'm gonna throw down an epic tailgate for hordes of drunk, hungry Badgers fans.
That is Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog on his TV show, Chef Jeremiah Forks It. And, you know, he traveled the country to numerous different cities to tape the show. And you know what? I'm going to talk to you about your TV show because it is a trip, some of the stuff that you do. By the way, there is language in that show. So, you know, I had to cut out some of those parts. But again, the number is 800-743-9576. Want to know your thoughts of the best food trucks in Miami. And if you're in the business, what's it been like for you? Again, 800-743-WLRN. Before we get to the phones, though, Chef Jeremiah, one of the interesting things, obviously, is as this the popularity of food trucks was growing again around 2011 and 12, and it's still going. I mean, the statistic I read was nationally, it's a billion-dollar business right now, but there are probably 4,000, maybe a little bit more food trucks in the country. Still, that causes, as you said, here in Miami and a lot of cities, it causes problems because it's a new type of business. You know, existing businesses didn't know how to deal with it, didn't like it. City leaders in many municipalities had to come up with rules and regulations on where you could do business. In some cities, you can only park in certain places for a few hours and you had to go. What was it like for you guys here in Miami? What were some of the challenges and roadblocks that you ran into?
Early adapters when we were pioneering the game on the streets of Miami, we were struggling. It was always a battle with, you know, some authority or another, whether it was parking authority or a police officer. I think it was just a lot of confusion. There weren't even laws in the Dade County Charter for what we were doing. One of the funniest things that we were incessantly told was, we're going to come by with a piece of chalk and we're going to mark your tire, and you need that, you know, you need to move every, I think it was 20 or 30 minutes. And so that dates back to an ice cream truck, right? Like, if you're selling ice cream, you can park for 3 minutes, and we're like, what are we going to do? We're going to flip burgers and like throw them out the window? So, you know, it was obvious to us that the city wasn't ready for what was happening. A lot of us, the original crew, when we used to set up on Tuesdays around the Bird Road area, Fishbox, David Garcia, Jim Hines from Latin Burger, Who else was out there? Someone's going to hate me for not remembering. But we kind of all put our heads together, so to speak, and we said, let's, you know, take this to the county. And Miami-Dade County, shout out to you, because you guys really came through and you helped us change things. City of Miami, they never really came around. I know people still tell me horror stories that if they're out on, like, Art Walk in Wynwood on a Saturday night, they're getting harassed and you need to be on private property. And, you know, hey, Miami, just put all these rules and regulations in one convenient place, preferably online so everyone can find it easily, and let us know what we can and can't do.
And what about Miami Beach?
Miami Beach still has the big old ixnay on the ood truck phase. There, I believe, don't quote me on this, ask Google, I believe food trucks are still illegal in Miami Beach. I know North Beach was pushing very hard. Shout out to North Beach. But we did, out of 7 years of food truckdom, I think we did two events or three events on Miami Beach. And it was seriously pulling strings.
800-743-9576. Again, joined by Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog here in studio. Let's go to the phones. I've got Fran in Miami. Fran, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Go ahead, Fran.
Well, I'm super nostalgic of my childhood eating ice cream, so I love Wynwood Parlor, like an ice cream food truck.
Oh, okay. You know what? I mean, I remember the old ice cream trucks. I still hear one every now and then, you know, the jingle. Not that I've chased one down in many, many years, but is that a food truck or an ice cream truck, though?
No, it's a food truck. I mean, you can find it. It's usually around Wynwood, like in the Art Walk and everything, but you can even get it, like, off the Postmates and stuff. It's really, really good.
All right. Okay, so we got one vote in there for that. Fran, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you. All right, let's go to Lewis. No relation, I promise. Lewis in Miami, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Lewis from Hialeah here. How's it going?
There you go. What's up, Lewis?
No, I was just wondering about the legal ramifications. If you're confined to a certain place, or you get a license and you can go anywhere in Miami-Dade County, except for maybe the ones you just mentioned, that kind of thing.
So if you're starting up a food truck, what are the rules? Lewis, thanks so much for the call. Let's get that answer. Again, the number is 800-743-9576. Yeah, what do they tell you at the beginning when you get started?
So to open a food truck, you need to start at the state. So you're going to the health department. You're filing all the same paperwork to open a food truck as you are for a restaurant, and then a few other on top of that. But each municipality, each county has their own rules and regulations. So if you do have a food truck, you need to do your due diligence and check in with them. And it's constantly changing. When we first started out, the funny story is we called the state, and I had opened restaurants before and I've opened hotels and I've been in the industry for a number of years. And I said, yeah, I'm opening a food truck. You know, can you point me in the right direction? They sent me to the wrong department, and we ended up with a, basically from the Department of Agriculture for operating in a farmer's market. And, I was like, yeah, this isn't going to do me any good, is it? And, Jim Hines from Lattenberger came over one day and, we're just kind of, shooting the, my cough button works. And, he's like, well, why don't you have this license? And I was like, well, what do you mean I have this license? He's like, I don't have that license. I was like, well, maybe I need to get that license, or maybe you need to get this license. So, yeah, it turns out we got pointed in the wrong direction, but we got that straightened out. And so you get your health department from state of Florida, and then you filter it down and you go to Dade County and you get your it's just like a tax license to be able to sell. And then whatever city you need to operate, then you need to get their license as well. So at one time we had four or five different licenses, and the fees are, they're not astronomical by any means, but if you were to do the calculations based on what your revenue is, it's quite high to pay these fees. And then on top of that, we sort of had these fees and we're told, well, you can't operate there. So, you know, the struggle was definitely real, Lewis. The food truck days, you're bringing back some memories of the early days on the street, I now know why it was such a relief to sort of sell that and to move on to the next thing.
All right, then let's move on to some other things. But I'm still going to take any calls. Anybody has any comments or questions of their favorite food trucks and the food truck scene in general here in Miami. Again, 800-743-9576. You trained at Johnson and Wales Culinary School, North Miami. What was that like?
Johnson and Wales, great institution. You know, I was one of the first classes to graduate from the North Miami campus. Easy decision for a Miami boy born and bred to not go someplace very cold for school. You know, going to school every day wearing flip-flops in the wintertime was awesome. Of course, then I had to put my uniform on. Johnson Wells is awesome. You know, the thing for me with culinary school in particular was the rigidity of it. It's sort of military sternness. You need to be clean-shaven. You need to wear a uniform every day.
Okay, anybody who's never seen you, and you obviously just pointed to your beard, and I laugh that you say the military, you know, because it just seems to go against at least what I've seen of your personality. Was it difficult for you?
It wasn't, you know. I was a bit of a cut-up in high school, sort of like the class clown. You know, if I wanted to buckle down and study, I would do well. It never sort of interested me. There was nothing in sort of high school that ever kind of spoke out to me. But coming to culinary school, yeah, maybe the first sort of trimester I goofed off and cut up a bit. And then I had a few amazing instructors who just kind of said, well, why are you here? Like, this is a lot of money. You know, are you just going to, you know, keep doing the same thing you were doing? And that's where sort of the discipline just straightened me right out. It was sort of like a wake up call. And luckily, you know, I was still basically a teenager right out of high school. And I just really took to it. I had already had a couple of jobs in industry. Always sort of fascinated with cooking and that sort of thing.
All right. I want to ask you about celebrity chef, the idea of celebrity chef, and also your TV show. We're going to take some more calls. We've got to take a break. Again, the number 800-743-9576. More with Chef Jeremiah coming up here on Sundial on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Talking with Chef Jeremiah Bullfrog, we've been talking about food trucks, talking about a little bit about his training in school, and of course we're taking your calls, 800-743-9576. Love to know your thought of the food truck scene. Maybe what's your favorite food truck in Miami? There's a big event, by the way, you did mention it, Chef Jeremiah, coming up this weekend.
Yes, sir. Pig 8, El Ocho, P-I-G, Pork is Good, coming at you live in effect in Little Haiti. It's all you can eat, all you can drink, one price for the low, low price of $50. You can pledge some money to NPR and also get a ticket to PIG. It's just something that we started off roasting a pig in a cajachina. We had about 50 people show up. The funny story is, the ironic thing is, the first year that we did it, 9 years ago, it was just before Gastropod. We already had the truck. We were sort of building up to it. And a friend of mine said, you know, they have this thing, Cochon 555. It's in Atlanta. Wouldn't it be cool if we did Cochon 305? And it's just sort of clicked in my head. I could do a preview of Gastropod menu and just do it all pork for this. And it just kind of came into its own. We're not a competition for chefs. We get we're up to 20 chefs now who come and participate. Think of it like Iron Chef, and pork is a secret ingredient. We brought in sort of like the local breweries. We've got 4 craft breweries this year pouring. We've got a giant Jim Beam bar. We're gonna burn bourbon barrels in the cajachinas and roast some pigs. We've got like 2,000 pounds of pork in creative and delicious ways. And you know what? It's just a good time. It's become something for me to sort of strengthen the culinary community. As chefs and business owners, we don't get to hang out a lot. you know, we're all kind of crazy busy with our schedules. We do a lot of events for other people, for charities. This one is just like, you know what? We all want to hang out. We all want to cook. We want to, you know, literally drink beer and eat pork.
By the way, let me clarify too. It does not support public radio, but thank you for throwing that out. I appreciate it.
My bad.
Before I go back to the phone, it's okay. Before we go back to the phone, though, I wanted to ask you about this idea of celebrity chef. So, I mean, you've been on a lot of different TV shows. Obviously, you had your own TV show, Chef Jeremiah Forks It, and you get to travel the country. But, I mean, you know, what is the idea of celebrity chef or just being a celebrity? I mean, what do you think about that?
I don't know. It's a misnomer.
Because the idea of chef, by the way, is the fact that look, you're not seen. You're in the kitchen. But... That's not what we've been seeing lately. It's
been a hot thing. Everyone, you know, sees like the whatever you want to call it, the big hubbub about it and wants to be a chef. You know, with social media, there's kids in culinary school who have like their handle, you know, Chef So-and-So. It's like, yo, I worked over 20 years to get that title. I didn't just give myself the title because I put on a jacket with my name on it. Yes, I went to culinary school. Did that make me a chef? Oh, no. All the years of blood, sweat, and tears, literally, working in kitchens, is how you get something like that. It's one of those titles that you definitely earn. You don't just name yourself a chef and wake up one day and here I am. You know, it's a huge learning process to be a chef. I'm still learning. There's still things that interest me. It's a never-ending cycle, right? Like, my new thing, Detroit-style pizza, I've been doing it for 3 months now. And by doing it, I mean I make a lot of pizzas. And I can't say that I've perfected it by any means. There's still little nuances and practice. And
having said that, you did bring one in, and we did get a taste of it. So I could say, hey, if you still got more to learn, that's still very good. I enjoy it. Let me get a phone call here or two if I can squeeze in real quickly. Let's go to Josh in Fort Lauderdale. Josh, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead, Josh.
I just wanted to do a little bit of commentary, unfortunately not so positive. My general feelings on the Miami food truck scene, the chef mentioned that he's happy to be in a new business. I'm not surprised to hear that. I find that the Miami food truck scene is really lacking compared to some other major U.S. cities like Austin, Texas. I just think that $9 for a single arepa that is more often than not only adequately prepared is just too much of what I call the Miami effect, which is, how much can we charge for this trendy thing in Miami, of all places, until people stop showing up? You see that in a lot of the restaurants, too. The prices just creeping up, up, up at places like Yardbird, et cetera. You know, it's more than just a tourist town.
Is there a city in particular that you think of that you like what they're doing there, or you think they're doing it better?
I think that the food truck scene in Austin, Texas is fantastic. It's ultimately diverse and very affordable. I know it's like a college town, but it's also a capital, and they strike a really good price point that's fair, but also probably profitable for the food truck operators. And I wouldn't be surprised if the food truck operators have their costs so high in Miami have their prices so high in Miami because their costs are also higher. Right. Maybe it wouldn't surprise me at all that Miami makes it difficult for the food truck owner.
Josh, thank you for the call and the comment. I want to give Chef Jeremiah the opportunity to answer. We still got a minute and a half. Go ahead.
I feel like you sort of answered your own statement there. Yeah, the food scene in Austin's much better than Miami. No dissing anybody here locally, but it is not easy to operate in Miami, either a restaurant or a food truck. And then if you want to just take it from a business standpoint, just look at your overhead costs in a place like Texas versus Miami. You know, the cost to operate is much higher here than in a place like Austin.
And you know what? I mean, it was listed. I've seen it. It's listed as one of the top cities for food trucks. Austin, L.A., also one of them up there. So, but you know what? I mean, hey, everybody's got a take. I haven't been to Austin. I can't tell you what the food truck scene's like there. Chef Jeremiah, Bullfrog, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Let's just shout out Miami and the culinary scene real quick, because I don't want anybody to think that it's less than stellar. We are a growing bunch who want to make everything better.
All right. That's the program. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a wonderful weekend. Talk to you on Monday.